whenever you fancy.
Anytime.
Is that Mickey Dorn?
Oh, him.
Keeps doing chimpanzee noises.
You going out with her?
Yeah, why?
When did it happen, lad?
What's that?
Your brains, when did you have them removed?
It was a mistake, but be honest.
You shouldn't have done it, Stumpy, because now I'm going to do you. What is the hope for this school if this is what they're capable of in the first year?
My dad didn't give me it. He should have gave me enough money as it was.
You didn't try and get it, did you?
I did, honest.
There's a fight in the boys' courtroom, sir. Gripper and Georgie Smith and a whole load of black kids are killing each other.
Detention tomorrow.
Yeah, but I'll go.
Or perhaps you would like to make it too.
And everyone assumes I'm on the streets buying drugs. Everyone takes it for granted I'm the one who's lying.
Every single pupil in this room will be expelled.
Welcome to Tony Hadley's Songs from the 80s. Not quite, listeners. Welcome to the Something Wicked podcast. Tonight we're doing Grange Hill. That was a nice, prolonged sustain there, Dave.
The first couple of notes of Grange Hill with a bit of wah-wah sustain.
That piece of music that was also used in Give Us a Clue was called something like The Chicken Man.
Bloody hell, that's a good bit of knowledge.
Yeah, Chicken Man by Alan Hawkins.
When was it written? Does it say? What year 70, did it write?
75.
That makes total sense. Shall I tell you why?
Why?
Because I remember at, I think it was at Chris Jojo's birthday, but I'm giving the game away here, but who cares? Chris Jojo's birthday party, which was like in December in about 1982, right? I remember that he had in his possession this porno on VHS, right, that had like Big John Holmes in it, and which I thought it was really very weird because I didn't like the fact that it was this party that was just all lads for a start, and all I've been doing is like headbanging to like AC/DC and whatever, and then we were going to probably watch a bootleg version of The Thing or something like that. I mean, I do remember watching The Thing, which is obviously a brilliant film, but watching it at Chris Jojo's house around the time of his birthday, because he had a few of these like parties each year for his birthday. But one year there was this porno, and it was Big John Holmes, you know, the infamous Big John Holmes, and some scantily clad women. Well, actually, obviously naked women exposing everything and shagging, basically. Everyone's shagging. And in the background, the music was...
Oh my lord.
It was the Chicken Man. But it wasn't to Grange Hill. It was the hardcore pornography.
So it was used in that. I presume the John Holmes film predated Grange Hill, which started in
76. Without doubt. That's why I'm saying it all matches up. It marries up perfectly because 1975 sounds about right.
Do you think the BBC knew that? Do you think Alan Hawkins have told them?
Well, I'm assuming that it was a piece of, it was an already existing piece of music, especially if it was called The Chicken Man, right? Yeah. And maybe it was like, was it a DeWolf Library thing? You know what I mean?
Possibly. It says here that it became known as the long-running children's scenes Grange Hill from 78 to 87. An entirely different arrangement of Chicken Man was used in the Chris Glover's Your Clue. Other uses has been used as a jingle in a supermarket advert in Spain. UK adverts, Paddy Powers, various other things, Simon Mayer's, BBC Radio 2.
Does it not say Buttfuck Freaks 2 starring John Holmes?
No, it's omitted that. It's omitted that, but it says it was recorded in Munich as part of the Themes International Music Library. Hawkshaw composed the tune in less than an hour, claiming he didn't really know what he was doing and he just wanted something quirky.
It's brilliant, isn't it? And thrust and thrust.
So, what are your memories of Grange Hill, Dave? Did you start watching it from the beginning in 78? Can you remember if you did?
Yeah, definitely remember it right from the off. My memory is vaguer as it went on, to be honest. But when it first came out, I thought it was fucking brilliant, you know?
Yeah.
I remember coming home from school and thinking, God, you know, like, there's these school kids that are smoking fags, and you know, it was literally, if it was on a little bit later, they'd been effing and jeffing. That was the only thing that was missing. It was kind of good because it was quite real to what school was like to some degree, but without the swear words.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's really unfortunate, because if there was a bit of a few F-bombs and C-words, you know, because really, in reality, when Alan was struggling to keep up with Tucker and Benny and Tucker in particular, Tucker would be calling Alan, you know, a stupid fat cunt, wouldn't he? Yeah, he'd be going, Alan, asthmatic fat cunt, keep up with us, you fat. Oh, I'm having a fit.
It was real to school because, you know, if you were fat, you got called fat. If you had big teeth, you got called goofy. Grangehill didn't gloss over that, did it? It could show kids being really horrible to each other. I remember one storyline with a girl called Diane who had spots and everyone was horrible to her, and kid was a bit scruffy, you know, and he was teased for being poor. And poor bloody Roland, obviously, just got it for all sorts, didn't he?
All sorts. Well, you know what I mean? He really was the sort of sitting target of Grangehill, wasn't he? Brought in to be this sort of gammon, this bit of gammon that was going to get.
Well, to be honest, me and my son, who's 8 now, we watched all the Grangehills. I bought them on DVD because you can get it from series 1 to, I think, 12.
Seriously? I did.
Yeah, so we watched a couple every night over the past year or so.
And oh, my God.
He absolutely loves it. So we watched them all from the first one, and I don't really remember much about the first series, so I'm thinking that I probably tuned in, you know, a little bit later, you know, possibly.
Possibly.
I think maybe I did see some of the first series, but the other ones after that tended to ring a bit of a bell, whereas the first series, there was all this new stuff, as far as I could tell, anyway.
The first series, it was all Tucker and Alan and Benny. And Trisha Yates, I think.
And
there was this kind of little bit of rivalry and tension between Trisha Yates and Tucker. And I don't really remember much beyond that.
Well, one of my favourite characters of all time, in fact, was in that first series, Doyle. Do you remember Doyle? Little sneaky twat.
Yeah, sneaky little snitch bastard.
He was a sort of bully, but he wasn't hard enough to be a bully, so he just picked on the weak kids, did a bit of nicking. He was just dead sneaky. He always used to use his dad, who was on the school council and a counsellor, throwing his dad's weight about.
Yeah, it was horrible.
He was a nasty bastard, but he was absolutely brilliantly played by the actor. He just really looked the part as well. He got a bit of a look of James Spader.
Yeah.
Spader always seems to
slimy.
Yeah, Spader always seems to play those types, doesn't he? Sort of quite unlikable.
James Spader is the type of a brilliant kind of typecast actor, of someone who you'd think, what is she doing with him? He is a loathsome turd, and you know it, but he's got a kind of sex appeal about him and got a bit of charisma. But yeah, that kind of sneaky, slimy shithouse.
Yeah, that's it. That's what Doyle was. He was a complete shithouse. And he stayed in it for quite a long time. Him and Tucker always used to have a rivalry and they'd get into little scraps and stuff. But the thing with Tucker is you just completely loved him as a kid, didn't you? He was an absolute hero because he was charming, he was funny. He'd try and get away with stuff. You know, like the class rebel.
I think that's the thing. It's like when I was a kid, Tucker was like the epitome of cool. But that was all stripped away. That was fucking ruined. The whole Tucker image was ruined when Todd Carty joined EastEnders and became like that fucking wishy-washy bloody Fowler boy. You know, boo-hoo, I've got AIDS, boo-hoo. You know,
it's not AIDS, it's HIV.
That's a good impression. That's really good. That's really good.
Bloody Pauline was a fucking witch, wasn't she?
You've got AIDS.
You ride a motorbike and you've got HIV. How dare you come into my house?
What a witch. So, you know, you obviously got Tucker. And those first series with Tucker, the first four series, I think, pretty much Tucker was quite prominent.
He was indeed,
I think he became even cooler when he got his leather jacket.
Yeah.
Then, of course, after he left Grange Hill, they had the spin-off Tucker's Luck. Did you ever used to watch that?
I certainly did. In fact, I probably at that stage, because unfortunately I have to admit that I am a couple of years older than you, mate. Because I was a little bit older than you, I think I preferred Tucker's Luck to Grange Hill at that point. But I was still, you know, I was still keeping an eye on Grange Hill, but I was more into Tucker's Luck.
Yeah, definitely. Now, in front of me, Dave, I've actually got the Tucker's Luck annual from 1984.
Oh, you lucky bastard.
Which is a fantastic read. Now, my favourite bit is probably the do-it-yourself doll kit. Okay, because it's full of tips about being on the dole. And it's got a picture of Alan looking confused by all these forms, right? So he basically gives you 4 or 5 tips to do when you're on the dole. Because at that time, if you remember Tucker's Luck, they were on the dole, weren't they? And that was the thread that ran through it. They were always looking for work and doing odd jobs here and there. Other features, Alan's taken his driving test. Tucker's testing him.
It's hilarious. That is in a Christmas annual.
They've got a feature of pop stars like Boy George and Simon Le Bon and Midge about what jobs they had before they became famous. So it's all very much job-based. I'm sure Thatcher approved of it.
I bet she loved it. It's like saying, you know, you're not qualified. You'll be on the dole for a while, but you will eventually get work, okay, and be a useful part of society.
Yes.
That's outrageous. Oh, it's fucking outrageous.
I loved the villain in Tucker's Luck, Passmore. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
It was like a Scar guy, wasn't he?
A nasty piece of work.
He was. He was brilliant.
Really nasty piece of work.
But in Tucker's Luck, they actually became friends. And Passmore had a very sensible haircut.
Oh, happy days. So, what is your most prominent memory from when you were a kid of Grange Hill? What is the series or the episodes that really...
Oh, that's a good question, that, Dave. I do remember Anthony Karanopoulos dying. He was in Tucker's year.
Yeah.
And he was messing about in the shopping centre on the roof.
Yeah.
And him and his mate were daring each other to do
something. I remember it very well.
So Anthony got up on the wall.
Yeah.
And a brick slipped.
Yes. Yeah.
And he fell to his death.
Yes, he did.
I'll never forget that.
No, I won't. That was big. That was big news as a kid.
Yeah.
That was big news that somebody actually died on Grange Hill.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember it being like big news, like Newsround did a big feature on it. And maybe even the 6 o'clock news had this thing about children's TV show features a kid dying.
Talking about Newsround, I always found John Cramer's Newsround really torturous to get through before Grange Hill, because I'd be coming home from school on a Tuesday or Friday, and I was really looking forward to it, especially if like the last episode had been really good and it had left you on a bit of a cliffhanger. And then you'd have to sit through bloody... I remember there was this Isle of St. Clair crap show about horses or something. Do you remember her off the Generation Game?
Yeah, with Ian Grayson.
And then you'd have John Craven's News Round.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, fuck's sake. And on Friday, I seem to remember on Friday it was a longer version than it normally was.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on, just get to Grange Hill, get to 5:20 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And
get to the action.
But I suppose my favourite era has to be the Gripper stuff.
Yeah.
Because Gripper was an absolutely amazing bully.
Yes, he was.
Really nasty, really nasty, malevolent. He was sort of like the bullies I knew at school. Yeah. Slightly psychopathic.
Yeah.
One of his main targets, of course, was Roland.
Roland, yes.
And, you know, from day one.
It's funny, isn't it? Because my memory of Granger sort of drifts from Tucker into Roland.
Yeah. You
know? And that incredible sort of strange relationship he had with the girl as well, Janet. What's the matter, Roland? Roland? I don't leave me alone, because I don't like you seem like this, Roland.
I remember her telling him, saying, "You're unhappy, Roland, because you eat too much and you get fat. That's why you're unhappy."
I think they showed that clip on a thing called The Reunion, where Erkan Mustafa was one of the guests. And I think Lee McDonald was also one of the guests, as you'd imagine. And her name, who I'm terribly sorry, I forget her name. But that really left an impression, so much so that, and we were listening to that as well, that that retrospective when they were coming together in this thing called The Reunion. So it's a radio show on Radio 4. They do lots of different things, but they did Grange Hill on this particular day. And it had Phil Redmond on, of course. Phil Redmond, listeners, if you don't know, is the guy who created and invented Grange Hill. And it was called something else to begin with, wasn't it?
I think it might have been called Grange Park.
It was. That's correct. For ages, it was called Grange Park. And then just at the last minute, they changed it to Grange Hill.
I think he used the name Grange Park later on in Brookside. I'm sure I read that somewhere.
Because, of course, he went on to do Brookside, of course, didn't he? He must be filthy rich, Mr. Redmond. He must be. But the Roland thing stuck with us so much that in the summer and just recently, because we've been to Poland twice this year, we kept calling it Poland. we're about to arrive in Poland. The plane is landing in Poland.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, well, I have to admit, Dave, and I feel sort of bad about this, but I never had any sympathy for Roland.
You know what? You just read my mind. I was just about to say.
I don't know if it was because the actor was so bad.
He was terrible, and he really got on my tits. I'm sorry.
Yeah. He was a whining, pathetic.
I think he brought
a lot of his own problems on himself.
On himself. And I think he was there to reflect. I think it was quite clever what they did with Roland, though, because I think you came home, watched Grange Hill, having been at school or whatever. I mean, I can't remember how old I was when Roland was on the show, but I'm assuming I was still at school. And I must have been, yeah, of course I was.
Yeah.
He probably came on the show.
82,
yeah, exactly. I bet 82. Maybe earlier than that, yeah, because, of course, it's 78 is when Todd Carty and Alan and Benny, and they're all like 60 now, aren't they? You know, like...
Benny's died, unfortunately.
Yeah, so sad that. Benny's dead.
Terry Sue Pratt.
George Armstrong, who played Alan Humphreys, he's 60 this year, and Todd Carty's 59. So, you know, they're all...
Well, let me tell you something quick about Alan Humphreys, right? This weird thing started off as Alan Turner.
Yeah.
Then he became Alan Hargreaves. Yeah. And then eventually became Alan Humphreys.
No explanation.
No explanation. Whatsoever.
My surname changed. Why did they do that? Why did they change
it? No, they just something just popped up.
That is dumb. That is so dumb. That is terrible. But yeah,
Humphreys is the best one though. I think he suits Humphreys.
He does suit Humphreys. Mm. I do think that he was deliberately there for you to be annoyed at, to find him annoying. In a way, because it reflected how you probably felt about one or two other kids at school.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, you know, because, you know, when I was at school in the 80s, it was cruel, you know what I mean? Anybody had a weakness and people jumped all over it, didn't they?
That's what Grange Hill got right.
It really got it right. It really understands the malicious nature of school and children.
Well, yeah. It wasn't just the children that were horrible to Roland, right? Because I remember his first day, and it's a great sequence. So Roland enters the school gates. He bumps into Mr. Sutcliffe. I don't know if you remember Mr. Sutcliffe, the tall English teacher with it looks a bit Art Garfunkel-y with more hair. He bumps into him, gets loads of shit off him. Like, what's where you're going, boy? You know, really yelled at.
Horrible.
Then he has a run-in, I think Tucker maybe is a bit cruel to him as well.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Then Gripper finds him.
Oh, God.
Nicks his money, threatens him, tells him he's got to give him 50p a week or something. And then Baxter's horrible to him as well. It's like the worst first day you could imagine. And at that point,
he'd been in there 5 minutes, and he's
this is all before lessons.
Poor old Roland.
Yeah, poor old Roland.
And then he's got Janet on his case all the time.
It was sad, really, because he never had like a mucker, did he? He never. No. I mean, in the later years, he became a bit more confident, and you know, when he was in the sixth form and he got new glasses, he became a little bit more confident, but he never had anyone to knock about with, did he?
No, it really did cleverly reflect that idea of the sort of awkward kid who becomes kind of the loner and therefore gets picked on, you know, and it was brilliantly done, really. I'm sure, obviously, they were trying to garner empathy from, like, the kids watching it, but in reality, it probably just reflected what they already understood happened at school.
Maybe kids watching it saw how the other kids were treating him on the show and probably thought, well, we fucking hate him as well.
I think that's much more the truth. I remember being at school, going to the school the next day and talking about Roland and everyone going about how they hated him. There was no real empathy there for poor Roland. He was getting bullied. He's like, and I think it might have even been more, God, he can't act. You know,
he was annoying. And he did have a really whiny voice, didn't he?
Yeah. I'm trying to eat my cake.
There was a period in the show where he just kept walking out of school and going home whilst his mum was at work and eating cheese and onion crisps in front of the telly. He actually got himself knocked down to avoid school. He slashed his hand with a chisel.
Oh, God. So tragic. God.
He couldn't face it. And I've known kids like that, you know.
Yeah, no. It's really, without, you know, laughter aside, you know, sorry. Sorry. He shouldn't laugh. Sorry, shouldn't laugh. But, you know, but that aside, it was showing now the effects of bullying and isolation at school. You know, it was brilliantly done, really.
When you saw Roland at first, all you ever saw was his mum, right? And you thought, oh, has he not got a dad? And his mum was always having a go at him. But she sort of felt sorry for him at the same time. But then one series, his mum had just fucked off because she couldn't stand it anymore. And his dad was bringing him up.
Oh,
but his dad was off and away at working. And poor Roland spent Christmas Day on his own.
And,
I think Janet came round and invited him to her house for Christmas dinner, but I can't remember whether he went or not. Amazingly, the actor Erkan Mustafa never went on to much else, did he? I think he did Chef. Do you remember Chef with Lenny Henry?
Yeah, I do.
He was in that.
I'm not surprised that Erkan hasn't really gone on to you know, win Tony Awards or Olivier Awards, you know, or a feature in much, to be fair. But if we can go in a slightly different direction now, Lee, because Grange Hill covered a lot of things, did it not? It covered a myriad of things. And one thing it covered in a very big way was drug addiction. We should have echoey voices when we say this bit. Put a bit of an effect on it. Drug addiction.
Yeah. Yeah, it did, of course. I mean, that was pretty groundbreaking, wasn't it? And not that I've been on the horse, but it seemed to portray Zamo's addiction quite accurately, quite well.
I mean, Zamo fucking loved it.
Yeah, he did, yeah. It was quite clever to use Zamo because Zamo was quite a popular character, wasn't he? A bit of a naughty kid that you liked. And though I did prefer his mate, Jonah. I don't know if you remember Jonah.
Yeah.
He was only really in one, maybe two series and then mysteriously got written out. But he was a fantastic character.
Do you know that Zamo is all but 3 days younger than me?
Oh, is he?
Yeah, born on the 21st of June, 1968.
So the way that the thing was done, the drug addiction, it was Zamo just kept being sneaky in a bit dodgy and selling stuff and he'd be borrowing money. You know, it took a while for the actual reason to be revealed. It culminated, of course, in, I don't know if he had an overdose because he was just smoking it, wasn't he? I don't think he was injecting it. Roland, if you remember, was working in the arcade, this arcade, and Zamo went round there, and that's tended to be where he met his scally mates. And he asked to go in the back or use the toilet. And that's when Roland found him slumped on the floor, didn't he, with a bit of tin foil in his hand.
And that picture I am looking at right now. You've been describing that to me, and I've been looking at the picture the whole time as you've been describing that.
But there was no music at the end. It just did this like dramatic sort of staggered zoom into Zamo's face with this like effect.
Fucking brilliant.
Like the $6 million man. Then the credits just rolled silently and we did think he was dead.
Yes. Zamo's had it through drugs.
Which of course led to the Just Say No.
Indeed it did.
Just song and video, didn't it?
Yeah.
Which was pretty horrible.
It was indeed. Very patronising song invented by the middle-aged liberals to try and stop people from using drugs. And of course, they failed miserably because probably most of the people in the video ended up smoking grass and doing coke and stuff.
Well, the thing is, they went to... You know, Nancy Reagan was involved in anti-drug campaigns.
Yeah, she was
so doing... So she invited them to the White House, right?
Yeah.
But on one of them reunion shows, half the cast were saying, yeah, we're all smoking weed in the White House box.
That's it all. Having a joint in the White House box when they're singing Just Say No. Oh, brilliant. That is fantastic. What about, Lee, we have a little discussion now about the teachers. Oh, yes. Do you know what I wanted to say before we talk about the teachers? I think one of the things that really drew a lot of kids into Grangefield right from the off was the amazing opening credits. Not just the music, but those, like, cartoon bubble pictures that were part of it all.
Sausage on a fork.
Sausage on a fork. And the fight and all that. And that, I would say, was quite groundbreaking. I don't think many other kids... TV shows opened like that.
No,
so it really drew you into it. Very catchy theme tune. And the cartoon sort of imagery kind of drew you into it. And then the show delivered right from the off for kids of our age, you know.
So who do you remember as the teachers then? Who were you? Have you got a favourite teacher?
Well, my favourite teacher that I thought was a twat, because he reminded me of a couple of teachers at school, was Bullet Baxter. I think most...
Yeah, he's my favourite teacher, right? Because I love Bullet Baxter. I think he was firm, but he was fair. He was a nice guy underneath.
He was.
You may disagree, Dave.
But... No, well, I don't disagree. But he did remember me of a couple of like games teachers at our school. You know, they were all right, but they were knobheads too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think Mr. Griffiths too, played by the actor George A. Cooper. He's like a really sort of naggy kind. He's been a lot of things.
He's the caretaker.
Yeah. He's like... Always sort of jittery and grumpy. And then, of course, I've got to mention the great Roger Sloman.
He was the first PE teacher.
He was the first PE teacher, isn't it? And who's the guy, what's his name, who was the... Is it Michael Sherd?
Yeah, Bronson.
Bronson.
Yeah.
Who, of course, played Hitler in the Indiana Jones films.
He did, and played Herr Grunwald in Alfred's and Pet.
He did. Shit, yeah. He was always a good go-to guy for playing kind of stern characters, wasn't he?
Yeah, apparently he was an absolutely lovely guy. You know, all the kids loved it. He was always having a laugh with them. There were some teachers I've read, you know, some of the actors and actresses that were a bit standoffish and found the kids quite annoying.
Right.
But Bronson or Michael Sheard really loved being around them, not in a dodgy way.
No, just fun.
And, you know, everybody who worked with him has great memories of him.
That's so nice to know. Can I also mention that I'm pretty sure that Michael Cronin, who played Bullet Baxter, also plays Mr.
Orally. Oh, no, it was Orally.
Yes! Yes! He plays me.
Yes. Of course, David Kelly is Orally.
David Kelly's Orally, and he's one of Orally's men. No, the thing is, Mrs. Faulty. Yeah. Don't you do that, you horrible little man, Orally. I would sort it out for you. And he was like one of his labourers, wasn't he?
Yeah.
In this sort of bit part in Fawlty Towers.
But Bullet Baxter, I mean, as I say, I've watched them recently, and my sort of affection for him has grown because... I think I remember at the time he was like a typical PE teacher because we had some dodgy PE teachers. There was one I remember, he was a bit insane. He looked like a white Billy Ocean. That's what we used to call him.
Like really big square head, like
just the afro and the tuft.
Well, we had one like that. Funny enough, the afro. What is it with like perm jobs? Perm jobs and dodgy tash. We had one called Till. He was like that. He was.
I think you mentioned him before, Mr. Till.
Fucking schizophrenic nut job. Honestly, what a prick. And we had numerous ones. I remember a guy called O'Neill too. Always like, so like this little bald macho tit, you know, in Cuban heels, trying to be somebody he wasn't. You know what I mean? Oh,
yes. Yeah. Desperate. You were always a bit too interested in the sixth form girls as well, weren't they?
Some
PE teachers.
Yeah, dodgy.
What I loved about Baxter is he was a good guy underneath, and I'll never forget this brilliant scene, and it's one of my favourite and most memorable scenes, where there's this other PE teacher called Mr. Hicks, who is actually a bit of a psychopath and a bully, and he's manhandling the kids, he's hitting them, and... there's one time where he pushes Stewpot down and Stewpot cuts his head. Now, of course, he says, oh, he slipped on the wet floor. But Baxter actually accidentally sees him pushing this kid over when they're playing basketball. And he calls him. He says, Mr. Hicks, come here. So Mr. Hicks walks into like the changing room and Baxter just lamps him.
Oh.
And he goes, slipped on the wet floor, did you?
Oh, God, amazing.
The thing is about that is that this other PE teacher, Mr. Hicks, looked like he could take Baxter.
Yeah.
Younger and a bit bigger, but Baxter didn't let that bother him. Just twatted him. That was it. The guy got sacked.
I have vague memories of that.
And that was the frustrating thing about Grange Hill, is at the time it was never repeated, was it? There was no like omnibus edition.
No.
You'd watch these brilliant scenes. And you just want to see him again, but you didn't have a video recorder in them days, or we didn't. And
ironically, I don't know why it should be, but I mean, we got a video recorder quite early, but I don't think we ever thought once to tape Grange Hill. If you taped anything in the early days of video, it was always something on in the evening, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It would always be a film or a TV show. So I remember we were always like loading up our blank videotapes with all sorts of stuff. An episode of Steptoe and Son followed by a film, The Man Who Haunted Himself, you know, or something, followed by...
Oh, I love that film.
I love that. Followed by, I don't know, an episode of The Cowboys or something. So you were trying to squeeze everything you could on the videotape.
Do you remember when long play came in, Dave?
Oh, yeah, and then you get 6 hours out of a three-hour tape. Oh, my God, that was... You didn't care, did you, that it might affect the quality of the
bit of a shit quality, wasn't
it? Yeah, but you know what? We didn't give a shit then. That is, everyone's obsessed with that now. Mm. It was all about the content back then. It was all about, because we were desperate for content, desperate for things to watch, you know, that were really interesting, exciting. Now you get ladled everything whenever you want it. The joy back then was getting everything, you know, the excitement of finding something new or getting something different to look at.
Going back to the teachers, do you remember the first form teacher, Mr. Mitchell?
Mr. Mitchell.
I want you to look him up, Dave. So he was Tucker and Trisha's first teacher.
Right. I've got here, this guy's very familiar, this Mr. Llewellyn. Mr. Llewellyn, played by an actor called Sean.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been in a lot.
He was the original headmaster, so he preceded.
Yeah.
He's McCluskey.
That's right. Brilliant. Right. So it's Mr. Mitchell. So there it is. Mr. Mitchell came up straight away. Oh, God, look at him.
You may recognise the actor because he has been in other stuff.
Michael Percival.
But is he not the bastard son of Piers Morgan and Buzz Lightyear?
Oh, God, he is. He really is.
With the bit of Paul Burrell thrown in.
Oh, my God, you're right there. That's a remarkable analysis, Lee. Yes. Yeah. Without doubt.
He was really good, you know, watching those early episodes. I did really enjoy his character.
Yeah.
He's sort of a nice form teacher, but quite firm at the same time. But he'd always take the piss or have a laugh with the kids.
He's got a hell of a credentials with the things he's been in. He's been in more sort of Lovejoy, Hello, Hello. Been in films like Glenn Close's 101 Dalmatians, Fish Called Wanda and Fierce Creatures. Harry Potter, yeah, he played the character of Horace Slughorn, apparently, I think. He died in September 2015. He is no longer with us.
But I think he only lasted one or maybe two series.
Right, looks so
characters
different.
Would just get written out, you know, really good characters came and went.
Yeah. Well, that's reality as well. That
I suppose, yeah.
The teachers do move. They get a better job. They move to a different place. Mm. Supply teachers come in. It'd be even more so now. The reality of Grange Hill now would be there'd be a new teacher every fucking fortnight, you know, because teachers giving up the bloody job, fed up with it. Supply teachers coming in. A learning support assistant takes the class, hasn't got a clue what the bloody to teach them. That would be modern day Grange Hill. The head teacher pulling their hair out because they've not got all the resources that they need. They're lacking 40 laptops.
That was a storyline in Grange Hill, you know, that they didn't have enough money for books and stuff. And I think to save money, they ended up merging three schools, didn't they?
Wow. That's really relevant. Yeah.
Yeah. So they merged Grange Hill with Brookdale, which was a slightly rougher version of Grange Hill.
Yeah.
They also merged it with Rodney Bennett, which was a very posh school. Yeah. And that's where Bronson came from.
Wow.
And I think they ended up on two sites. So there was like a lower school and an upper school in two different buildings. But Bronson, the storylines he had were amazing. You know, when he was picking on Aunt Jones, when he had this weird relationship with Kendall, Danny Kendall, who I have to say I never liked. You know, he was always sort of portrayed as this rebel, this maverick, this guy who didn't stick by the rules. But in reality, he was just an annoying little belligerent twat. No, he didn't really have much of a cause. He was just being awkward for the sake of it.
Listen to this. So I was slightly thrown because I was deciding to have a little look at Michael Sherd's Wikipedia, right? And it transpires that he was born exactly 30 years before me. 18th of June, 1938.
Wow.
There you go. But my God, his credits, the list of things he's been in, it's amazing. Sadly, he passed away at the age of 67. 31st of August 2005, the age of 67, he passed away in the Isle of Wight. But oh my God, the things he's been in, Lee, ranging from the 1972 TV series Colditz and On the Buses to Crown Court to Doctor Who and the Daleks to The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, of course.
One of the Raiders films. It's incredible. The guy has done. Hello, again. He played Herman Göring on Hello, Hello.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's played Hitler more than once.
Yeah, you know. I'm sure.
I think he has, you know.
Yes, he says it early. He says, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. This is brilliant. Sherd portrayed Adolf Hitler 5 times in his career. in Rogue Mail in 1976, in The Tomorrow People. Do you remember The Tomorrow People?
Yeah.
The kids' scientific show in 1978. In The Dirty Dozen, Next Mission in 1985. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade in 1989. And the documentary Secret History, Hitler and the Andes in 2003.
Wow. The thing with Bronson, I don't know if you remember the Aunt Jones storyline, but that was fascinating. Because he just seemed to have it in for Aunt Jones.
I remember really wanting Bronson to get it. I really remember that very clearly, of despising him.
He did have this real vindictive streak to him.
He was a nasty piece of work.
Though he loved Roland. And do you know why he loved Roland, Dave? Because Roland was really good at French.
Ah, Roland did have a gift.
I don't know if you remember the French exchange trip. So they had pupils from France coming over. And did that happen in your school? Because I remember it happened in ours.
I can't remember.
French kids coming over. And I never had anyone staying with me, thank God.
We had some Germans stay with us. That was hugely embarrassing.
Did you put faulty towers on?
No, but my dad, he couldn't resist. Started showing him his books on Hitler and the Reich and all this. I have always had an interest. My dad was like that. I've always had an interest in the Second World War, you know that Jürgen, don't you? And my mum and my brothers and I were like cringing as we go, I've read this book from cover to cover, The Life and Death of Adolf Hitler. I'm like, no! Leave it, Dad! Leave it!
But these French kids turned up and spoke perfect English. Right, and Roland actually had a girlfriend.
How did that happen?
Well, she looked like she was a female version of Roland. Just Google Roland's girlfriend and you'll see what I mean.
Brilliant.
Marianne, I think she was called.
Marianne.
You're telling me it's Janet St. Clair? That was his girlfriend.
Hey, that's not Janet. Yeah! That's Janet. Roland. That wasn't his girlfriend. That was his nemesis.
You fucking hate
Why
you,
do we eat so much, Roland?
Yeah, but Roland actually, to see her, there was a trip to France and he stayed behind. Right. He didn't come back. And I think one of the teachers, maybe it was Bullet Baxter, had to go and bloody pick him up. He was well pissed off.
You know, in a way, bit of success and victory there for Roland. Which is good that progressed in that way. It's great, this, Lee, because I'll be honest with you, you're filling me in on details here that have long gone out of the memory bank. I'm loving this re-enlightenment of all things Grange Hill, because I did genuinely think that Baxter was a bit of a tit, but as you're pointing out to me now, he's obviously a decent bloke. My memories of him were probably installed into those early episodes where he was a bit officious. Right. I think it's a good reflection, though, of how teachers were back at that time. The kids, you know, today, like my lad watched it today, he wouldn't, there's no way that he would identify his teachers with them. You know what I mean? I'd like him to look at it, really, to be honest.
Yeah. The other teacher I do remember, and you probably do, is Scruffy McGuffy.
That rings a bell.
Do you remember the Welsh? I think he was Welsh.
Yeah, go on. Fill me in on the details.
He was an English teacher, and he was a bit of a hippie type Louis Theroux with longer hair.
I'm going to look him up now.
Bill McGuffy. So he was always encouraging the kids to, like, be themselves, and I think he supported the abolishment of the uniform.
Oh, brilliant. A rebel teacher.
Yeah, he was a bit of a rebel teacher.
Oh, yes. Oh, and I recognise his face and everything really well.
Well, we've got to talk about Gripper, Dave. Now, it got really serious and dark with Gripper because at one point he was trying to start a race war.
Yeah, yeah. He was a horrible little racist prick.
Yeah, so it started off with him picking on this Indian guy called Randia who wore a turban. And then he sort of got his mates together and they were doing some protests. And I remember him sabotaging... I don't know if you remember Glenroy the Rasta.
Go on, say that again.
Do you remember Glenroy the Rasta?
Glenroy the Rasta, let me have a look.
Glenroy.
When I see the face, I'm sure it will.
Yeah, he's played by Jevon from Only Fools and Horses.
Oh, yes. That's brilliant.
He was someone that stood up to Gripper, and Gripper was scared of him, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it ended up, this race war ended up with this fight. With the black lads and Gripper's lot. At that time, I remember, he was the best one in it.
He was. As soon as you mentioned it a while back, I automatically came, oh, Stebson, Gripper Stebson, and knew the name straight away. And then when I'm looking at him, it's all come flooding back as to what a nasty fucking piece of work he was. You know, and I remember the race riot and all that. It's really interesting because that's probably about the time when I was sort of drifting off it, you know, from watching it. And still sort of bobbed into it every now and again and watched episodes. Yeah.
I don't think it was ever the same after he left, to be honest.
No, it probably wasn't.
There was a brilliant bully. I don't know if you remember Imelda.
Oh, God, no, you
know. Imelda Davis with a spiky hair.
Imelda Davis, let's have a look. Imelda Davis.
She was in Gonchi's year.
There we are. Imelda Davis, Grange Hill. Oh, yes, I recognise her.
She, again, was slightly psychopathic and she ended up being sent to, like, a psychiatrist because she was just so disruptive. She was vicious. She never knew where the line was. You know, she would set fire to people and...
The reason why she's very vague in my mind
is that that was really late on when she came into it, isn't it?
About 86, 87, maybe.
Yeah, because it said the end of Imelda was in 1987. Mm. And that's the thing. What year did it finish, Lee?
It finished in 2008.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, but it had gone absolutely shite. They've released the first 12, maybe, I think it's 12, possibly 13 series on DVD, but they've not released any more as far as I know. It really did go downhill after that. And they changed the theme tune. They changed the opening titles.
Shocking.
And they ended it in 2008 because they thought, well, that's it. It's run its course. And it was very issue-led. It was very PC. And, you know, I didn't watch it at that time. It's just stuff I've read. But it lost its edge massively, I think.
God, I did not know that. I really thought the show began its run on the 8th of February, 1978. BBC One, and was one of the longest running programmes on British television when it ended on the 15th of September 2008 after 31 series of it. That's crazy. But this is the great thing about it, though, Leo, just say this, and this is so true about it, that what it did reflect and what it did cover was quite remarkable, because it says here, it covered such things as racism, drugs, e.g. Zamo Maguire's heroin addiction and LSD, teenage pregnancy, HIV and AIDS, homosexuality, knife crime, homelessness, rape and sexual assault.
Hollyoaks.
Yeah, it does. Mental illness, brackets, e.g. bipolar disorder, divorce, cancer, e.g. leukemia, gun crime, child abuse, alcoholism and death.
Oh my God, and there's me saying it went a bit boring. I did read that it was criticised for being too issue-led, a bit like Brookside became. So yeah, that would have been the later years.
Well, that's the way every fucking soap opera type thing has gone. I mean, you know, you can say Grange Hill was kind of like a soap opera because it was always in the same place, the same people and one thing. But it's all this. I mean, you can literally, we were talking about this with the Archers, weren't we, having a laugh about that. Every kind of, I could not watch a single soap opera now to save my life. Every single one has a similar fucking storyline or has similar characters. You've always got a black lesbian or gay man in it, and LGBT people. And not that there's anything wrong with any of that, but the fact that it's so bludgeoned into the show.
It's a bit cliched now, isn't it?
It's crowbarred into the storylines.
Yeah.
It's such a cliche. Everything's a bloody cliche. The amount of, like, I kind of get it, and I kind of understand when you're having these things sort of based in, like something like based in, like, 1850, and it's got, like, three black characters in it who have got, like, good jobs, you know? And I kind of understand why that takes place. You kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit. But the reality was not that. But these soap operas have these kind of ongoing stories where it's crazy. Each one has got to have a couple of gay couples in it. The Archers have got to have, like, some black fella that runs the creamery down the road or something, you know. Mr. Odawango runs the fucking creamery. And Mr. Chong is the landlord of the pub, you know what I mean? It's like things that don't really
exist. It is so patronising, though.
It is really patronising, exactly that. That's the word, it's really patronising. Yeah. They've all gone down that route. What they captured when they started doing it right from the off, and certainly for the first, let's say, 5 or 6 years, is it was just showing the kind of barefaced misery of secondary school for a lot of people. Especially, you know, like comprehensive secondary. I didn't go to a comprehensive, you know. I actually went to a private school, but it wasn't much different, trust me. It was not a great private school, and I wish I'd never gone to a private school because I'm dead against it. My lad goes to a comprehensive, doing amazingly well, and he loves it. And it's a great school. A great school's a great school. There shouldn't be such a fucking thing as a private school in my books, but that's another story. But what it showed you was, certainly back in 1978, the kind of abject misery of secondary school and the difficulties for the kids and the teachers, you know. I think it expressed it really well, expressed the sort of frustrations of the teachers as well as the frustrations of the kids.
Yeah, it was, and it did it in a sort of non-forced way, you know.
Yeah, exactly, not patronising. Yeah, yeah.
You never felt anything was forced with it.
No, No,
and you learn so much from Grangell, I thought, and it did give you comfort. You know, if you were having a bad time at school, you'd go home and think, well, at least I'm not Roland.
Well, that's exactly.
But I wanted to maybe talk about some other characters, Dave. Is there any other memorable characters in your head?
Well, I'm trying to do my best to avoid that bloody EastEnders woman who's in it.
Oh, Michelle. So,
yeah.
Oh, Suzanne.
Oh, Susan Tully, for God's sake. I mean, she was an archetypal sort of teenager, spotty-faced, miserable, you know, face like a slapped arse. Yeah. Face like a bulldog-licking piss of a thistle, let's be honest.
Well, we'll skip her. But I suppose, please, to me, the last interesting year was probably the one with Imelda and Gonch and Ziggy and Trevor Cleaver. Do you remember Trevor Cleaver? He's one of my favourite characters, the ginger twat.
Yeah.
Gonch was always, he was a bit of an entrepreneur, wasn't he? And always trying to make a bit of money. I was just thinking of what schemes he came up with. Do you remember the one where he was selling toast?
That seems to ring a bell. I'm laughing because I'm looking at the pictures of him now.
But he wasn't particularly likable, I thought.
No.
Smug and
smug twat.
Again, not a great actor. But he also ran a homework service. So he'd do your homework for about 5p.
Yeah, yeah.
And he also did a PE kit lending scheme. Right, so if you forgot your PE kit, you go to Gonch. And he also ran a dating agency, though I don't remember that.
That's funny.
But I'm sure he was the one responsible for nicking Bronson's wig. Because they saw Bronson having a swim, and they went into the change room, and they saw his wig sat on his clothes. And they nicked it, and they ended up putting it on this dummy, this mannequin that they found. And I remember Bronson coming in the next day and he had like a different coloured wig on. And of course, all the other teachers knew he wore a wig. So they could see something was going down there.
Brilliant.
But the other one in that year was Ziggy, the Scouser.
Yeah, yeah.
He was all right, Ziggy. You know, he was okay. But the funny thing about Ziggy is he brought out a book. Right. Now, this book, if you look it up, Dave, his name's George Christopher, the actor. So I do want you to look this up. And I think it's called something like, it's about his bipolar.
Yes.
It's very reminiscent of the Alan Godfrey self-published book.
Really, is it?
Well, typeface, the self-published look of it.
So George Christopher's book. Let's have a look.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great.
From Grange Hill to Bipolar and Back, it's called. Oh, George Wilson, it says.
Oh, I see it now. I see what you mean. Sorry, I see what you mean about it being like low. Yes.
Now, on the back. Like
low red typeface. Yes. Just a photograph of him and then the typeface around it. Now, £12.60 on eBay.
So there's some quotes on the back, you know, like from Gwyneth Powell, Mrs. McCluskey, from Zamo, from Robbie. But the best one is the one at the bottom from Tony Hadley, lead singer of Spandau Ballet. So I'm just going to read this out. So Tony Hadley says, I just want to wish you all the very best. I heard about your new book coming out. It will be gold.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
So they put a quote on there from Hadley who hasn't even read the book.
Not even read it. Oh, my God.
It's going to be gold.
Cringe.
How does Tony Hadley know?
Oh no, that is just probably thinks he's doing a kind act and have used it as a recommendation to read the book. Jesus.
Yeah, I don't think I'll bother, to be honest.
No, I don't think I will bother. But that said, I have to say, on the flip side, we're talking about the Alan Godfrey book, that is rather enjoyable. And I am friends with Alan on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
But sadly, he let himself down, I have to say. He did let himself down because he flagged up a picture of immigrants coming across the French Channel, you know,
And they were like, oh, frog march and back, and all this kind of, oh, dear, Alan.
Well, he is of that age, isn't he?
He is. Well, it just makes him kind of more human, you know. He's adamant. He keeps putting on, I know what I bloody saw. I'll tell them now. I know what I saw. Didn't make it up.
Okay, Alan.
Come on, you've got to admit, Lee, it's a great story.
It is a great story.
You know, all the Adamski stuff. Great yarn, if nothing else.
I think what we should do, though, to end the show is to find out what some of the Grange Hill stars, what became of them in a sort of where are they now feature.
Brilliant.
Which I'm going to read directly from the internet. So obviously it starts off with Todd Carty, Tucker Jenkins.
Yeah.
And we're all well aware that Tucker went on to EastEnders and Dancing with Ice and various other shows. I think he was in The Bill, wasn't he? I think he was.
Yes.
And apparently, I don't know if you've heard, but the Phil Redmond is trying to make a Grange Hill film. And some of the old pupils are apparently coming back.
So what's it going to be, like a retrospective of?
No, it's going to be a reflection of school today.
Okay, yeah. That's interesting.
Right, so then we've got Terry Supat, who of course...
I think it sounds terribly sad about his death. It says that it was reported that Supat may have died up to a month before his body was discovered. A monthly. It sounds to me like he kind of fell off the map a bit, really. He was only 50 years old.
Oh, was he just 50? God, I thought he was a bit older.
1964 to 2015.
Right. So moving on to Bullet Baxter, Jeff.
Oh, yes.
He actually... was in the Grimleys. Do you remember that one with, was that with Noddy Holder?
Oh, that rings a bell, yeah.
The Grimleys. And he was also in The Mayor of Casterbridge.
Yes.
Which I do remember. And he published his first novel, Against the Day.
Wow.
Which was shortlisted for the Angus Book Award. And he's also written two film scripts, No Final Truth and Stealing the Fire, both broadcast in the 90s.
Wow.
Apparently he's still alive, though I'm not sure how old this article is.
Yeah, it says here with me, it's saying he's still alive. They can't say for sure, but they reckon he's between 79 and 80, but in 1942.
One person we haven't really mentioned is Stew Pot. He was quite a prominent character, wasn't he?
Stew Pot.
Played by Mark Burdiss, who he was always in things. I don't know if do you know his brother, Ray Burdiss? You'd probably know his face if you saw it. But they were in a great show called Operation Good Guys. Did you ever see that?
Yes, I know. I have seen it. I know exactly who you mean.
Yeah.
He's done lots of stuff.
He was in The Bill as well. But again, who wasn't, you know? So Susan Ross, Susan Tully, she was, of course, Michelle in EastEnders. But now she is quite a successful director, isn't she? She directs EastEnders, I believe.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
You often see her name on the credits. Now, Gripper, I do remember reading at the time that Gripper really got a hard time, you know, the actor Mark Savage, because people couldn't separate him from the character, and they used to start on him, and he became homeless for a period. I'm not entirely sure what's happened to him now, but I do remember he was in Morris's video for Dagenham Dave.
Yes.
Typical of Morrissey, because he got Joey Barton in one of his videos.
Yeah.
He quite likes these sort of characters. Bad boys. Bad boys, yeah.
Probably gets off on him and has a big wank, doesn't he? Ooh, yeah, ooh. Ooh. Yeah, because he likes that, Morrissey. He likes the idea of a bad boy. Yeah.
I think that was a good move. Now,
Having a wank over the bad boys.
What was that?
What, having a wank over the bad boys? It's a good move.
So Zamo, of course, Lee McDonald, became a bit of a boxer for a period. Yes. I remember seeing him on TV, Channel
4,
to feature this first show where they'd be like young amateur boxers, and Zamo was on it. But nowadays, he's running a successful key-cutting business in London.
Is he really? Good for him.
Yeah.
That's so normal. Brilliant. Yeah.
Robbie Wright, do you remember Robbie Wright, Ziggy's friend?
Yes.
Now, he ended up in London's burning, didn't he?
Yeah.
Got stung by the News of the World's fake shake.
Right.
The fake shake got him to buy some coke. didn't it? And that ruined his life, really. He ended up in prison for 6 weeks or so.
God, shocking.
Though he did actually, I've not heard this before, he had several top 40 hit singles produced by Stock Aitken and Waterman.
What? You're joking.
Gonch became a manager of a casino.
Right, fair play.
It says a job slightly in keeping with the character he played.
Wow.
Now, Imelda, this is the best one, or one of the best ones, is I remember just watching Holmes Under the Hammer, and there was Fleur Taylor, the actress, turning up as an estate agent.
God.
I reckon this property will fetch $495 per calendar month. Oh, with a yield of 8%.
I'm just looking here, Lee, you know, I feel like I'm bullying myself here, but looking at Erkan Mustafa's like TV credits, right? It's quite sad, really. It makes me feel a bit sad for him, really, because other parts include Enormous Orphan in Blackadder's Christmas Carol.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
You know what I mean? Oh god.
Well, he couldn't act, could he?
So no, he just can't. In 2000, Mustafa hosted a Grange Hill cast reunion at Sound Nightclub in London. Can you imagine it if only like three or four of them showed up? Oh, God. I bet that happened, you know.
If you've got a real job.
Yes. Oh, dear. Have you read this? Look at his filmography credits. So you've got Grange Hill, Roland Rowley Browning, right? Blackadder Christmas Carol, Enormous Orphan. 7 episodes of Chef, so that was okay. Okay, that's okay. And that he played Otto. Okay, The Bill, Inquest Jury Member, right? Oh, bless, 2005. Bring Back Grange Hill in 2005, where he played himself, a TV documentary. 18 Stone of Idiot, he played himself, one episode. That just sounds
What the hell is that?
18, I'm going to look it up now, 18 Stone of Idiot. 18 Stone of Idiot is a British television programme broadcast on Channel 4 in 2005, designed as a vehicle for Johnny Vegas and produced by Chris Evans. They are.
Oh. The
Vegas' stated intention was to make a programme so ridiculous that there was no way they'd recommission it. Each show had one primary guest who Vegas interviewed and who were further involved in various stunts and skits. So basically, he brought him on to take the piss out of him.
Poor Erkan.
Oh, he was on Pointless Celebrities with, once again, Lee McDonald with Zamo.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing that.
And he was on Soccer AM.
Yeah, I mean, none of the child actors really went on to much, did they? From
no, yeah. It's sad, isn't it?
Stu Pott and Tucker.
I mean, to be honest with you, it really is.
Never saw Alan in anything else, did you?
No, never. Well, in fact, what is he doing now? He's not an actor.
I think he works like as a stagehand or something.
Does he still smoking a fag out the back? I'm having a fag. Hang on a minute. I'm having a fag.
Oh, it seems like there's so much more to talk about with Grange Hill, but I think we should end it there, Dave.
I have to say, sir, I bow down to your incredible...
Well, I have had the advantage, like I said, Dave.
I knew that was going to be the case anyway, but...
Yeah, it was.
And I just thought, well, I know that my contribution would be to say some stupid things about it, really. And just to reminisce of what I remembered, which was really those first few years of it, to be honest.
Mm.
When it was a big event. You get home from school, it was a big thing to watch.
And listeners, please send us your memories of Grange Hill. That will be
good. Yeah.
And keep on sending us any comments, really, or any suggestions. We have had a few suggestions for some podcasts, so we may be doing them in the near future. But until next time, goodbye.
What are you doing? Just fine. nose.